Hello, this is Donna, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the weekend edition of the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. No charges yet after inmate dies following an assault at Marcy Prison by Greta Stuckey. An inmate at the Marcy Correctional Facility died last week after he was assaulted, state police said. Terry DeMonstoy, 45, was found by a correction officer unconscious in a bathroom around 11:55 on May 15th with significant injuries, state police said in a news release on Thursday. DeMonstoy was taken to Wynn Hospital, where he was treated in the intensive care unit. He remained on a ventilator but was pronounced dead on Monday, troopers said. Troopers responded to the prison on May 16th to investigate the assault. Investigators believe DeMonstoy's injuries were suffered during a fight with another inmate. An autopsy is being done by the Onondaga County Medical Examiner's Office. DeMonstoy was serving a sentence of 2 to 4 years in prison after being convicted of fourth-degree grand larceny in 2024 in Schuyler County. His earliest release date would have been June 5th, according to state prison records. State police are assisting the State Attorney General's Office with this investigation. In other news, we probably heard about the fact that everybody went to vote for state budget proposals at the school districts this week, and some data that was released in Orange County, a school district tops per pupil spending. Number one school district for pupil spending in upstate New York during the 2024-25 school year was the Curious Joel Village Union Free School District in Orange County. The district spent more than $213,000 per pupil last year, according to data from the State Education Department. Curious Joel is an unusual district. It was created in 1989 to serve students with disabilities in the village of Curious Joel, where nearly all the residents are Hasidic Jews. The district was also number one for per pupil spending statewide last year. Per pupil spending in Onondaga County districts are included on this research. A search table with the top 25 districts and a table with all New York State districts is included in the Syracuse.com version of this report. The spending figure includes a combination of local, state, and federal funding sources. For the purpose of the ranking, upstate New York is everything north of Rockland and Westchester counties. The highest ranking school district in Onondaga County last year was Lafayette. The district spent $35,385 per pupil during the 2024-25 school year, ranking it number 192 statewide. The Syracuse School District spent about $29,539 per pupil last year. Per pupil spending is not a perfect measure of efficiency. In the larger districts, the effect of fixed costs that are broadly similar across schools of any size end up getting spread out across a larger number of students. Statewide average for New York State for per pupil spending is $31,791. In Oneida County, law enforcement are sharing summer boating tips as they gathered at Sylvan Beach on Thursday to remind Central New Yorkers to stay safe on the water ahead of the Memorial Day weekend and the start of summer. Oneida County Sheriff Rob Machel said wearing a life jacket remains one of the most important ways to prevent deaths on the water. Officials also stressed that New York now requires all operators of motorized boats to have a valid state boating safety certificate. Authorities reminded boaters that operating a vessel while intoxicated is illegal and dangerous. Alcohol remains one of the leading causes of fatal boating accidents nationwide. Other safety reminders include checking weather conditions before heading out, keeping emergency equipment on board, maintaining safe speeds, and filing a float plan with friends or family before boating. Onondaga County Sheriff Tobias Shelley said the shared waters of Oneida Lake connect both counties and require cooperation to keep boaters safe throughout the busy summer season. Law enforcement officials encourage residents and visitors to follow boating laws and prioritize safety while enjoying the Memorial Day weekend festivities and this upcoming summer season. Story by Greta Stuckey. In Oswego County, a man was found dead after a house fire in Richland. Troopers responded around 4:26 a.m. to a fire at 870 Route 41 in the town of Richland, state police said in a news release. When the troopers arrived, they found the home fully engulfed in flames. The property is a single-family, two-story home, according to county records. Firefighters from the Ringgold, Richland, and Mexico Fire Departments responded along with multiple other departments. During the investigation, authorities found a man dead inside the home, the trooper said. His identity has not yet been released. The fire was contained to the residence. Investigators say there are no suspicious circumstances surrounding the fire, and the cause of the fire is under investigation. Story again by Greta Stuckey. In Cayuga County, 8 people at a nursing home were hospitalized after exposure to an unknown substance at a nursing home in Auburn on Thursday. Firefighters were sent to Auburn Rehabilitation and Nursing Center at 85 Thornton Ave around 2:24 p.m., the Auburn Fire Department said in a news release. One resident and 6 staff members were taken to the Auburn Community Hospital for evaluation. Another staff member drove to the hospital on their own. Their conditions were not immediately available. One resident was evaluated but declined medical treatment, firefighters said. Story by Vince Gasparini. From the finance pages, Destiny USA's owner couldn't seal a deal to have its $714 million debt, have as in cut it in half, by Rick Moriarty. Destiny USA owners and a lender cut a deal last year that would have wiped out more than half of the Syracuse shopping mall's $714 million in debt. The deal, not previously reported publicly, collapsed when the mall's owner was unable to make a $70.5 million payment in exchange for the lender forgiving the remaining balance on the $464 million in mortgage. The offer would have been a financial shot in the arm for Pyramid Management Group, which has lost 3 malls in 3 years to foreclosures and has struggled to pay its debt while brick-and-mortar retailers lose sales to e-commerce giants like Amazon. Instead, the failure of the deal leaves the mall, the largest in New York, at risk of foreclosure. The loan forgiveness agreement is disclosed in a financial statement that Destiny USA filed in April. The disclosures are publicly available because the mall owes $250 million on bonds issued by the Syracuse Industrial Developmental Agency as part of a payment in lieu of tax agreement. If the mall owner, Pyramid affiliate Carousel Center Company, has been able to come up with that $70 million, Wilmington Trust would have wiped out the remaining millions of mortgage debt off Destiny's books. That's 55% of the $714 million total debt owed on the mall, a break that would have gone a long way to relieving the shopping center's considerable financial stress. Destiny has been making interest-only payments on the balances of 2 mortgages, one totaling $130 million and the other $334 million. J.P. Morgan Chase originally made the loans in 2014 and then transferred them to Wilmington in 2019. The loan's due date was originally June 6, 2019, when Pyramid was required to pay them off or refinance them. When Pyramid was unable to do either, it negotiated an extension of their due date. But Pyramid defaulted on the mortgage loans in April 2020 when a temporary shutdown during COVID significantly hurt the mall's financial operations. In response, Pyramid entered into numerous agreements with Wilmington to extend the loan due dates. As part of those agreements, the lender temporarily suspended its right to foreclose. Under the last of the agreements, Wilmington gave Pyramid until December 31, 2025 to make the discounted payment of $70.5 million. In return, the lender would forgive the remaining balance. In effect, Pyramid would have paid 15 cents on the dollar to get rid of that mortgage. Destiny plans to come up with the $70 million by refinancing its bonds. While a foreclosure by Wilmington would not be good news for Pyramid, it would not necessarily mean much to shoppers because the mall will likely continue to operate under a new owner. In other business news, Oswego County programs prepare workers for the building trades by Rick Moriarty. A new program is preparing residents of Oswego and Cayuga counties for careers in the construction trades, a field sure to grow when Micron Technology begins building its Mammoth Conductor Center, its semiconductor plant in Clay. Oswego Build, launched in 2025 to provide hands-on training, field trips to union training centers, and small group construction projects to familiarize students with the construction trades and soon the energy industry. The program is based on a similar program in Syracuse called Syracuse Build. It is open to Oswego and Cayuga County residents who are 18 or older, have basic math and reading skills, and possess a driver's license. Oswego Build is the latest in a growing effort to prepare Central New York's labor force to meet the growing needs of employers. Micron began work in January on what the memory chip maker says will be the largest semiconductor plant in the nation. When fully built over the next 20 years, Micron says the $100 billion facility will employ 9,000 people directly. In addition, the factory will create more than 40,000 more jobs at supply chain and service companies and other business lured to the area. That means a lot of new industrial, commercial, and residential buildings are going to be going up in Clay and elsewhere in the region. As construction companies will be needing electricians, carpenters, and plumbers, other trade workers to build them. Daniel Petty, program manager of Oswego Build and senior employment specialist with Oswego County Workforce New York, said the goal of the new program is to improve local residents' chances of getting into union apprenticeship programs. For a project as big as Micron's, construction companies will be bringing in a lot of labor from outside the area to meet their needs. But Oswego Build is part of an effort to make sure that local residents get first shots at the new jobs. Apprentice programs are work while you earn training programs for the building trades. They're the traditional way people start careers as union electricians, plumbers, carpenters, and other construction trade jobs. Unions in Central New York have been expanding their apprenticeship programs to meet the anticipated need for more workers. The International Brotherhood of Electronic Workers, Local 43, completed a $7 million classroom building last year at its training center in Clay. The addition will allow the union to double from 200 to 400 the number of apprentices it can train at the center. The North Atlantic States Regional Council of Carpenters completed a $3.6 million expansion of its training centers in Salina in 2024. Up to 500 carpenter apprentices and journeypersons train at the center each year, a number that is expected to double with the expansion. Oswego Build has conducted two 14-week training courses. The first began last August with 10 students, and the other started in January with 15 students. A third one with 15 students is scheduled to start on July 13th and will last an extra 2 weeks because it will include training for careers in the energy sector, a major employer in Oswego County because of three nuclear power plants. Not everyone who applies gets into this program. Petty said 80 people applied for the first two cohorts and 60 have applied so far for the third one. Classes are limited to 15 people because of the hands-on nature of the training and budget limitations. Empire State Development, the state's economic development agency, has provided $500,000 in grants to fund the program. People interested in applying for the program must attend an information session and an in-person interview before they're given the opportunity to file that application. Petty said only applicants who are serious about starting careers in the building and energy trades are accepted into the program. No experience in construction is required. Participants who are paid the state minimum wage while attending the 12 hours a week of instruction. 4 to 8 hours a week are spent in the classroom at Oswego County Workforce New York Career Center at 200 North 2nd Street. The rest of the time is spent visiting union-run training centers and job shadowing. No prior experience in the construction trade is required for entry into the program, so people looking for career changes are welcome. Acceptance into a union apprenticeship program is not guaranteed following graduation from this training program, but Petty said Oswego Build will assist graduates with their applications for apprenticeships. Of the 25 people who have participated in the first two cohorts, 20 graduates, an 80% graduation rate. Four of the five who did not complete the program left because they moved out of the area or ran into transportation problems. The other participant failed to attend classes. Petty said three graduates have entered those apprenticeship programs they're training for. Others are going through the apprenticeship application process with the unions, and eight have obtained non-union construction jobs. Interested persons should call 315-591-9000 to sign up for the information center, that first step in the process. Petty said people interested in obtaining more information about the program can call him at 315-532-7121 or email him at daniel.petty@oswegocountynewyork.gov. In manufacturing news, MACNE starts a nonprofit to tackle the worker shortage in Central New York by Renee Fox. A century-old manufacturing group is creating new nonprofits to tackle an urgent issue, helping businesses find more workers. The Manufacturing Association of Central New York, MACNE, is bringing all its workforce programs under one roof. The new Manufacturers Talent Institute aims to replace what has often been a patchwork system of training programs with something more coordinated and driven by employers' needs. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. We're recalibrating, Michael Frame said, who will lead MTI while continuing as MACNE's executive vice president, to meet the workforce demands we've heard from manufacturers for quite some time. Founded in 1913, MACNE has long served as a membership organization focused on advocacy and support for manufacturers. Workforce development has become increasingly a central mission as companies struggle to find skilled workers. MTI formalizes that work, combining programs that already existed into a single pipeline. Those programs range from introducing students to manufacturing careers to helping adults train for entry-level roles and advance through apprenticeships. The move comes as the region prepares for a surge in manufacturing demand tied to that semiconductor supply chain and companies such as Micron Technology. At the same time, Frame said, the shortage predates Micron. Existing manufacturers continue to deal with retirements and long-standing vacancies. The scale of expected growth has forced workforce groups to rethink how quickly they can move people into jobs and how many entry positions they need in the workforce. One challenge is reaching people who've never considered manufacturing. If you've already graduated and were never exposed to it, how would you know it's an option? Frame said. MACNE's programs such as Real Life Rosies and Advance to Apprenticeship aim to bridge that gap. They typically last about 12 weeks and combine foundational technical training with workplace basics like communication and interviewing. They also pay participants and offer support for transportation and childcare. Those programs have grown quickly. Since 2023, more than 400 people have enrolled in pre-apprenticeships with about 120 currently in training. According to MACNE, about 4 in the 5 programs participants secure regular employment immediately after completing their program. Since starting a decade ago, the program has placed 1,230 apprentices in program in positions with 221 companies across 26 trades. These programs run in partnership with community colleges in Onondaga, Cayuga, Monroe, Broome, and the Mohawk Valley. For Central New York, how well the system works will shape how much of the growth stays local. The opportunity is here, Frame said. Now we just have to build the workforce to match it. From our Savings Angel column, how to cut your top two summer budget killers before those costs climb higher, Josh Ellidge. Right now, many families feel squeezed from every direction. Grocery prices remain stubbornly high, energy costs are climbing again, and headlines about global instability are adding another layer of uncertainty for consumers already trying to stretch every dollar. Recent spikes in oil and transportation costs tied to the war with Iran are beginning to ripple through everyday expenses, especially groceries and utilities. Analysts have warned that rising fuel and shipping costs tend to affect more than just what we pay at the gas pump. At the same time, summer itself naturally pushes household costs higher. Air conditions run constantly, kids are home more often, and grocery spending tends to increase with gatherings, snacks, drinks, and less structured routines. That combination can feel overwhelming. But while families can't control world events or broader inflation pressures, there's some still practical ways to reduce the strain and regain a little stability at home. Summer creates a perfect storm for household budgets. Electricity use rises sharply as the temperatures climb, while grocery costs increase due to the many changes that come with the season. Kids are home from school, so that means more meals, more snacks, and more frequent grocery trips. Families also tend to host more gatherings and cookouts during the warmer months that discreetly push spending higher week after week. Meanwhile, higher fuel and transportation costs ripple into those food prices because nearly every item at the grocery store must be grown, processed, shipped, refrigerated, and stocked. While those supply chain costs rise, consumers eventually will feel it at the checkout. As we said last week, the goal right now shouldn't be perfection. It should just reduce the pressure where you can. So keep your utility bill from spiraling with your air conditioning adjustments. Start with some simple habits. Keep your blinds and curtains closed during the hottest part of the day. That reduces the heat inside. Use ceiling fans and box fans to circulate the air so your AC system doesn't have to work as hard to push the cool air through your house. It's also important to check your air filters regularly. The dirty filter restricts airflow, forcing your system to use more energy to cool your home. And if possible, avoid running heat-producing appliances during those peak afternoon hours, like ovens, dryers, and dishwashers. None of those changes is dramatic on its own, but together they can reduce your summer electricity usage. One of the biggest mistakes people make during periods of inflation is shopping reactively instead of strategically. Control your grocery costs because summer grocery spending often becomes more impulsive as your schedules loosen. More quick trips to the store usually mean more unplanned purchases. Try to build even a loose meal plan for the week. It doesn't have to be rigid, but having a basic structure reduces waste and cuts down on expensive convenience spending. And it's also time to lean heavily on those sales cycles. If meat, produce, or pantry staples are on sale, build meals around them rather than shopping without a plan. And remember, the shelf price should rarely be the final price. Coupons, store apps, loyalty programs, and strategic stock-ups still matter, especially during periods of rising costs. Many families feel the pressure to spend heavily on outdoor gatherings in the summertime, but gatherings don't need to become financial events to be enjoyable. Potluck-style meals are one of the easiest ways to reduce the burden on any household. Most people are happy to bring something to pass around, like a drink, sides, or desserts. And it also helps to simplify menus. You do not need elaborate spreads to host a successful cookout. Focusing on a few affordable staples and buying around those sales can dramatically lower costs without reducing the experience. And people remember the company they keep rather than the menu, usually. One of the sneakiest budget costs or stressful times is convenience spending. When you're feeling tired, overwhelmed, or emotionally drained by that financial pressure, it becomes really easy to rely on takeout, delivery apps, convenience snacks, and quick trips to the grocery store. That reaction is understandable, but these small purchases will add up quickly because they happen frequently and often without too much thought. These expenses add up fast, and then they catch you by surprise when you're looking at your budget at the end of the month. The solution is not eliminating every treat or convenience purchase because we got to live a little after all. It's just becoming more aware how often they're happening. Periods of economic uncertainty can create a feeling that households must optimize every dollar perfectly just to survive. That mindset becomes exhausting and tends to lead to disappointments. Incidentals will come up and unexpected expenses might hit your weekly budget. Don't set yourself up to feel like you failed when this happens. Instead of trying to do everything flawlessly, just focus on consistency. A slightly lower electrical bill, a few less necessary grocery shopping, more intentional shopping habits, and simple gatherings all create breathing room over time. Small wins matter right now, and being nimble and adaptable is key. Don't hold yourself to impossible standards and focus on staying consistent while you save and shop smartly. In sports news, number 6 seed Syracuse faces a battle-tested Notre Dame squad this weekend with the championship experience fueling the orange confidence by Brett X. Only one team is making the return trip to the NCAA Division I men's lacrosse semifinal this year from a season ago, and that team is Syracuse. Back-to-back trips to championship weekend used to be routine for an Orange lacrosse program that once made 22 consecutive trips to the Final Four. Number 6 seed Syracuse will be seeking its 18th trip to the national championship game and the first since 2013 against number 2 Notre Dame this weekend at Scott Stadium in Charlottesville, Virginia. Syracuse-Notre Dame will follow the championship weekend opener of number 1 seed Princeton versus Duke at noon. Notre Dame fans have learned to block out Memorial Day weekend as SU fans once did, as the Fighting Irish are making its 7th trip to the Final Four since 2010, 8th overall, and seeking its 3rd national championship in the last 4 years. I think just being there gives the experience and the confidence to know that we can play at our best, Syracuse head coach Gary Gates said. I think you're going to see our best game of the year this weekend. Weather could be a factor in the matchup with periods of rain, temperatures in the 50s, and a chance for thunderstorms in the Charlottesville area. Scott Stadium has a natural grass field. The Orange have played on grass just once this season in North Carolina. SU spent the week doing drills but not fully practicing on grass, a tactic head coach Gary Gates cited from his training staff in making the transition to playing turf from turf to grass. Notre Dame took down Syracuse by a score of 16-11 the last time they met back in April. Bonheim's Army is going to face Seton Hall alumni in the TBT Showdown by Donna DeTota. Bonheim's Army will play an alumni team from Seton Hall in the opening round of the basketball tournament this summer. The best of three series will begin July 21st in New Jersey at Walsh Gymnasium and rotate to Syracuse for Game 2 if needed, and play Game 3 also in Syracuse. The Syracuse games will be played at the On Center War Memorial. Bonheim's Army will be captained by Buddy Bonheim, Boheim, who played last season mostly in the G League for the Oklahoma City franchise. Boheim made his TBT debut last summer for Boheim's Army. He appreciated the pro-Syracuse crowds and the chance to interact with the fans. "It was so fun last year," Boheim said Wednesday. "Obviously, we didn't get the result we wanted, but after the first game, I was like, wow, that was as much fun as I've had in a long time playing basketball." Isaiah Whitehead is captaining the Hall In team. He told TBT he was hoping to recruit majority of the Pirates' 2016 Big East Tournament title roster. Whitehead scored 26 in a 2-point win over Villanova in that game. Boheim's Army general manager Sean Belby said he's trying to build a roster around Boheim for the past few weeks. He said he's talked with a few former Syracuse players who've never played in TBT but have expressed interest in Boheim's Army this summer. More to come. In golf news, Lazaro bounces back to the top field as state qualifier by Kevin Smith. New Hartford junior J.P. Lazaro had a tough break on the golf course earlier in the week. Lazaro shot a 68 for a top score at the Section 3 AB Spring Tournament on Monday, but teammate Tommy Goodell shot a 67 to take home the title. On Thursday in the Section 3 state qualifier, Lazaro turned it up a notch. The junior compiled a total score of 143, which ended as the top score of the tournament. The performance qualified Lazaro for his second straight New York State tournament appearance in June. Lazaro shot 73 and 70 in the first and second rounds, respectively. "It was a little bit of a roller coaster today," Lazaro said. "I felt like I put it together a decent performance. I caught a couple of breaks, but it was a blast. I feel like 70 was a really good number at Timber Banks. There were a lot of tough pins and a lot of wind, but it felt that way for the rest of the field as well." If you're planning on golfing this Memorial Day weekend, you may have to hold off until Monday. We're expecting showers today and Sunday, but Monday we're mostly cloudy with only showers in the morning. Highs in the 70s come Monday, Tuesday 80, 79 on Wednesday, Thursday 74, and Friday 74 with mostly sunny skies for the week. Around the region, Albany's checking in with the 70s and cooling down into the 50s over the weekend. Same thing with Lake George, a little cooler in the 60s and 50s. around the country. Anchorage in the 50s. Honolulu in the 80s. Las Vegas is cooling down a little bit. They're not hitting triple digits this week, only in the 90s. And in San Francisco, temperatures sitting in the 60s. From around the world, Acapulco, London, and Paris all checking in the 80s. While it's a little cooler in Tokyo, checking in the lower 50s, getting up into the 70s by the middle of the week as well. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The Memorial Day debate. It began in Waterloo, or did it? As Americans honor those who've died serving in the military, they're gathering for parades, graveside ceremonies, and other remembrances. But where did these annual Memorial Day customs begin? Tradition points to the Little Finger Lake village of Waterloo, where a local pharmacist and a Civil War veteran led efforts to decorate the tombstones of soldiers. President Lyndon B. Johnson and Congress even recognized Waterloo as the holiday's birthplace. The village still celebrates that, even as other communities say they, in fact, were the founders of this commemoration. Well, let's take a look at the history of it. On May 5th, 1866, almost exactly 1 year after the Civil War ended, a local community pulled together for an organized commemoration of the war's dead. The effort was led by a local pharmacist, Henry Wells, and a Civil War veteran, General John B. Murray. The village was Waterloo in the Finger Lakes region. The main part of the commemoration was a gathering of villagers who marched to the local cemeteries and decorated the graves of the Civil War soldiers. This event caught on with other communities across the state, which followed suit. Soon, it spread even further and became widely known as Decoration Day, a day to honor all war dead by adorning their graves with flowers, flags, and wreaths. The day eventually morphed into Memorial Day and was proclaimed a national holiday in 1968 to be celebrated the last Monday in May, beginning in 1971. It all started in that tiny Seneca County village in upstate New York. Or did it? Although the U.S. government officially proclaimed Waterloo as the birthplace of Memorial Day, there are many other communities across the nation that proudly claim their own birthrights to the day. Despite where it started, let's take a look at things happening on Memorial Day and this upcoming week. With Monday being Memorial Day, Americans honor and mourn the members of the military who gave their lives for their country. Events being ready to cross Central New York are listed here after a day of rest and reflection. The week ahead is also a busy one. Through June 21st, as we spoke about last week, Frozen is at the Syracuse stage. The story of Disney's beloved sisters, Anna and Elsa, running at the Syracuse stage 2 and 7:30 on the weekends, 7 p.m. Wednesday through Friday, and 2 and 7 p.m. next Saturday. Tickets are $35 to $175. Parades around the country, or around the state anyway, will be listed here a little bit later in this broadcast. And we'll also talk now more about what's happening. On Wednesday, you can see Menopause the Musical. The hit sequel returns with four women navigating menopause on a cruise ship set to parodies of classical pop songs. The show blends humor and relatability to celebrate women and the midlife changes. It's going to be at the Landmark Theater on Wednesday at 362 South Salina Street, 7:30. Tickets start at $54. The Onondaga Historical Curator of History, Robert Searing, will lead a 45 to 90 minute lunch hour tour from OHA's museum to Clinton Square. You can take a stroll down memory lane of past businesses, the railroad that traveled through the downtown, and lost historic treasures on the Heart of Syracuse tour. Arrive and check in at the OHA's front desk 10 minutes prior to the start of your tour. Each group is capped at 15 guests. Tickets are at shop.cnyhistory.org/events. Tickets are $20. The event starts at 321 Montgomery Street in Syracuse at noon on Wednesday. On Thursday, the Syracuse Food Truck Takeover and Market returns to the CNY Regional's Market A Shed every Thursday through October, featuring food trucks, live music, and local vendors. The event draws a wide range of cuisines such as Korean, Filipino, Colombian, Mediterranean, and classic American comfort food. The covered venue keeps the event running, rain or shine. You can go to tinyurl.com/foodtrucktakeover for each week's scheduled food trucks. 2100 Park Street in Syracuse from 4 to 8 every Thursday until October 29th, free admission. On Friday, you can enjoy beer, wine, and spirit samples at Beaver Lake Nature Center with music, food trucks, lawn games, scavenger hunts, and raffles. You must be 21 or older with a photo ID. Go to tinyurl.com/Lakeview Brew to register. This is 8477 East Mud Lake Road in Baldwinsville from 5:30 to 8 on Friday. General admission is $40, members $35, includes admission to the park. Also on Friday, a rock sales by play will be at the CNY Playhouse. Astrophysicist Lynn Cummings navigates science and faith while mourning her husband and reconnecting with her daughter. When a mysterious object heads toward Earth, a misquote from a dubious magazine threatens Cummings' credibility. Tickets at cnyplayhouse.org, 116 West Glen Ave, Syracuse, 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday. General admission is $22. Seniors 65 and up, $15. Children 12 and under, $13. Next Saturday, Steal Your Face, born from the spirit of Jenny Garcia and the Grateful Dead, is known for mind-blowing jams, innovative lead guitar, and emotional vocals. Starting in Philadelphia dive bars 20 years ago, the band has shared bills with legends like Bob Weir and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and has blazed its own trail. The band will perform at Westcott Theater. Tickets at westcotttheater.com/shows. 524 Westcott Street in Syracuse. 8 p.m. on Saturday. The doors open at 7 and advance sale tickets are $32. Six Wicket Croquet Open House. The local American Six Wicket Croquet League is hosting its annual open house at Westvale Golf Course, offering a free introduction to the sport. Attendees can learn the rules, court layout, and game strategy from local players. Croquet is a social game with roots in medieval Europe that's accessible to players of all ages and skill levels. 100 Gulfview Drive in Camillus from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday next weekend, and it is free to attend. St. Luke's Episcopal Church of Camillus is hosting vendors selling items from their car trunks. That's the junk in the trunk sale. The event will feature a bake sale and a free cup of coffee with any baked good purchase, as well as the Wildcat food truck on site from 10 to 1:30. That's at St. Luke's Episcopal Church, 5402 West Genesee Street in Camillus from 9 to 2 next Saturday, and it is free to attend. On May 31st, the CUSE Community Yoga Day, yoga studies from studios from across Syracuse will join at Everson Museum's Outdoor Plaza for a full day of 20 to 30 minute sessions led by instructors offering their own style and perspective. Come for one session or stay for the full experience. Go to tinyurl.com/CUSE Yoga to register and view your schedule. 401 Harrison Street in Syracuse from 10 to 4, May 31st, and the cost is by donation. Empower Federal Credit Union Amphitheater at Lakeview will mark its 10th anniversary with an all-ages event featuring a ceremony, backstage tours, VIP club access, on-stage photo opportunities, live music, and food trucks, plus interactive zones from community partners. Take a digital passport challenge for a chance to win concert tickets, VIP parking passes, and other prizes. 419 Restoration Way in Syracuse on May 31st, free admission and parking for this event. Two-time Grammy winner, Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter Jason Mraz brings his Still Yours 2026 tour to the Landmark Theater. Known for hits like I'm Yours and I Won't Give Up, Mraz has built a decades-long career blending pop and folk songwriting styles with an earnest, feel-good delivery. His most recent studio album, Mystical, Magical, Rhythmical, Radical Ride, was released in 2023. Tickets at Ticketmaster, 362 South Salina Street in Syracuse, 7:30 on May 31st. Tickets will start at $54. The Fire and Iron MC Station 99 hosts its annual 100-mile charity motorcycle ride to raise funds for local firefighters battling cancer and other debilitating medical conditions. Proceeds are distributed with the help of the Believe 31 organization. All bikes are welcome, and the day includes a breakfast, food truck, and food raffle prizes. You should meet at the Cicero American Legion Post 787, 5575 Legionnaire Drive in Cicero. Registration begins at 9:30 on the 31st. The ride kicks off at 11. The cost is $25 for riders and $15 for each passenger. St. Paul's Episcopal Church in downtown Syracuse will kick off its Bicentennial Celebration Series with a presentation on the life and legacy of Aria Sargent Huntington, who lived from 1848 to 1921. She was a pioneering advocate for women and children in the Syracuse area. Catherine Barada, Associate Professor of Social Work at Central Connecticut State University, will deliver the talk, drawing on her doctoral research at Syracuse University. Huntington was the first woman elected to the Syracuse School Board and founded what is now the Huntington Family Centers on Gifford Street. Go to stpaulsyr.org for a live streaming link and additional information about the bicentennial schedule. St. Paul's Episcopal Church at 220 East Fayette Street in Syracuse, 11:30 a.m. It will be preceded by a 10 a.m. worship service and fellowship on May 31st, and it is free and open to the public. Now let's take a quick look at the parades scheduled on Monday for the Syracuse area. In Cayuga County, Auburn will hold their parade at 11 a.m. In Cortland County, Preble will also hold their parade at 11 a.m. In Madison County, Canastota kicks off their parade at 10. Cazenovia at 10:40. In Onondaga County, Camillus will have a wreath-laying ceremony at the Camillus Town Hall at 7:30. The parade will begin on Main Street at 9:30. In Cicero, their parade will begin at 10:30. In Eastwood, the parade will begin at 9 a.m. Fabius, their parade begins at 10. Fayetteville, 9 a.m. Jordan will have a parade in the afternoon at 2:15. In Liverpool, their parade begins at 9, Manlius at 11 a.m., Marcellus at 10 a.m., Manoa at 11 a.m., Salve Geddes begins at 9:30, Oswego County, Central Square, their parade begins at 9 a.m., in Mexico, the parade begins at 10 a.m., in New Haven, their parade is in the afternoon at 2 p.m., Phoenix has their parade beginning near the Burn Dairy on Route 57 at noon, and in the town of Oswego, their parade will start at 10 a.m. As we celebrate Memorial Day this weekend and the official kickoff to summer, we also have to remember that this is our 250th anniversary of being the United States of America. So let's look at some of the best places to celebrate the 250th, and rankings say two of them are located in upstate New York. Story by Samantha House. America celebrates its 250th birthday this year on the 4th of July, and according to new rankings, one of the best ways to commemorate the nation's birth is with a stroll through the historic upstate New York battlefield where the American Revolution took a pivotal step toward victory. The Saratoga National Historic Park has been named one of the 8 must-see American Revolution landmarks by USA Today's 10 Best. It crowned the Capital Region Park America's Best Battlefield Walk. USA Today's 10 Best also included one other historical upstate spot, Fort Ticonderoga in the Adirondacks. The Syracuse National Historical Park consists of about 3,400 acres, about 11 miles east of Saratoga Springs. The national park is made up of three sites, the 3,000-acre battlefield in Stillwater, General Schuyler House in Schuylerville, about 8 miles north of the battlefield, and the towering Saratoga Monument, less than 1 mile west of Saratoga House, Schuyler House. Two important victories in the Americans' battle for independence from Britain occurred on the Saratoga battlefield in the fall of 1777, when American soldiers forced the British to surrender. According to 10 Best, the Saratoga National Historical Park preserves the spot where crucial moments in determining the outcome of the American Revolutionary War took place. The Saratoga Park is full of treasures to explore, from cannons perched over Bemis Heights, the ridge overlooking the Hudson River Valley, to Johnson Nielsen Farmhouse, the tidy red one-room home that served as a headquarters building for the American Army. In its ranking, 10 Best noted the many ways visitors can experience the battlefield, from a 10-mile driving tour supplemented by audio and interpretive signs to hiking, biking, and horseback riding trails. The National Park, where costumed reenactors sometimes fire muskets and bring the Revolutionary War to life, preserves other important sites. That includes the place where the British surrendered, the estate owned by Philip Schuyler, Alexander Hamilton's father-in-law, and the 155-foot stone obelisk erected to commemorate America's key victories. If you go, it's open from 9 to 5 daily. The visitor center has restrooms, a museum store, 20-minute orientation film, a 15-minute fiber optic light map, timeline display, and artifact displays. Pick up a park map and a brochure there. Tours at the battlefield are self-guided. You can take a hike down Wilkinson Trail or drive along the tour road when it's open. Information about the park is available on the NPS Park mobile app. Optional audio tours, exhibits in the visitor center, and interpretive stations along the way. It is free to go, and the website is nps.gov/sara/index.htm. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Service. The other must-visit American Revolution landmark that landed on the 10 best list is about 70 miles north of Saratoga National Historical Park at Fort Ticonderoga. Built in the 1750s, the star-shaped fort on the shore of Lake Champlain made history as the location where the Continental Army's first victory, when the fort was captured by Benedict Arnold and Ethan Allen in 1775. Fort Ticonderoga is also provided the weapons that Henry Knox brought to General Washington to end the Siege of Boston in 1776. The restored fort, which 10 Best dubbed the best living history landmark, is a living history museum where costume-wearing interpreters act as 18th century soldiers, families, and artisans. Saratoga National Historical Park is at 648 Route 32 in Stillwater. Its visitor center is on the northwest corner of the Saratoga battlefield between U.S. Route 4 and State Route 32. The park will celebrate the nation's 250th birthday with a film, presentations by park rangers, and a concert in early July. Visit the website for hours and more information. Fort Ticonderoga is at 102 Fort Ty Road in Ticonderoga. The museum will hold a Revolutionary War funeral procession event at 11 a.m. this weekend. Watch Continental Army soldiers conduct a solemn funeral procession for one of their own, a moving, historically grounded ceremony that places the true human cost of the Revolution at the center of your Memorial Day experience. This is not a reenactment. This is a remembrance. The museum will also celebrate America's 250th birthday with a three-day reenactment from July 3rd to the 5th. Visit Museum's website for a calendar of events and more information. If you go, it's 9:30 to 5 on Tuesday through Sunday through October 25th. Costs are $30 for adults, seniors $28, children 5 to 15, 14 children under 5 are free. Tickets are good for two consecutive days. It's at fortticonderoga.org. Besides celebrating our 250th anniversary, you might want to get outside and check out some things from our outside column. Franklin County talks about the Wild Center marking 20 years with a film and free community celebration. The Wild Center in Tupper Lake is celebrating its 20th anniversary with a free public event in July, a newly produced signature film, and a season's worth of programming at its 115-acre Adirondack campus. The museum, which opened in 2006, is open 10 to 5 daily with extended hours of 10 to 7 during July and August. Advance tickets are recommended and are available at wildcenter.org/tickets. On July 11th, the museum will host a free community celebration with programs across the campus and a live outdoor concert by singer-songwriter Martin Sexton, who also performed at their opening in 2006. Reservations for that event are encouraged. A reimagined version of the museum's original film, The Wild Adirondacks, will debut, featuring updated high-resolution imagery and contributions from Adirondack photographer Carl Hellman II. Thomas Dambo's outdoor exhibit, Trolls, Save the Humans, will open June 1st and run through October 31st. The installation features six large-scale recycled wood troll sculptures that are placed throughout the campus. July 4th brings the Troll Trot 5K, a 5K run and walk throughout the campus. Registration will start at 8 a.m. on race day, and the race begins at 9. Troll Tuesdays from 4 to 7 from July 7th through August 25th will feature live music, crafts, and workshops each week. Regular programming includes daily animal encounters, fish feeding demonstrations, and river otter exhibits, along with canoe trips on the Racket River. A full calendar of events can be found at wildcenter.org/calendar. Also in the outdoors column from Schuyler County, Watkins Glen Waterfall-filled Gorge is getting a new bridge from Sonny Hernandez. The iconic arch that has welcomed hundreds of thousands of visitors to the main entrance of Watkins Glen State Park is being retired as a new bridge is installed. The concrete and stone Century Bridge was built in 1908. Visitors could walk through a cavern-like tunnel before emerging at a footbridge over the plunge pool of one of the park's 19 waterfalls. But time and weather took a toll. In 2022, officials reported significant erosion that compromises the bridge's integrity at both ends. An aluminum truss was placed over the walkway while plans for replacement move forward. Last summer, the Watkins Glen Park closed the main tunnel entrance and the Century Bridge at the start of the trail for repairs. The popular Gorge Trail remains accessible from other entrances. The old bridge weighed 112.5 tons, according to a press release. The replacement, made of stainless steel, weighs 15 tons and is intended to last 100 years. The new bridge reinterprets the historic arch with a contemporary half-arch design and is being installed as part of a $7.5 million project. Handrails must still be installed and the bridge must be secured on the north end, WENY reported. Historical elements of the old bridge are being preserved in the stonework leading to the both ends of the new bridge, officials said. Installation work began last month with an estimated reopening of the main entrance and full gorge trail on July 7th. So the weather might not be great for doing stuff outside this weekend, but there's some new shows that are going to be starting out on TV that you might want to get excited about. This is from the Los Angeles Times. If a vacation or road trip isn't in the cards this summer, you can still be transported to faraway places and alternate universes like in Spider-Noir and Little House on the Prairie. You can visit the American frontier, 1930s New York, and the mountains of Europe, the TV shows this summer. The first one is on Prime Video. It's called Spider-Noir. It starts on May 25th. Why is that series adaptation of comic books feel so much more satisfying than their film counterparts? I like to think it's because we get to immerse ourselves for hours in the world of the characters, who often have grounded stories that make superheroes be more like everyman. In Spider-Noir, based on the Marvel comic Spider-Man Noir, we're transported to an alternate universe set in 1930s New York. Our everyman is Ben Reilly, played by Nicolas Cage, making his live-action television debut. A private investigator who moonlights as the city's only superhero, the Spider. After a tragedy, he hangs up his mask, but circumstances change and he has to become the Spider once more. The series is replete with talent, including Lamorne Morris from Fargo, Brendan Gleeson from The Banshees of Inisherin, Lee Jun Lee from Sinners, and Karen Rodriguez from The Hunting Wives. To further immerse you in the noir setting, the series is being released in both black and white and color. Four Seasons, Season 2, starts on Netflix on May 28th. Navigating the loss of a friend can be a long and winding journey, but this group of friends is hiking through their grief, at least temporarily. The comedy returns for its second season, and the tight-knit group of friends, Tina Fey, Will Fort, Carrie Kinney-Silver, Colman Domingo, and Marco Calvani, are mourning their longtime pal Steve Carell, He's the character Nick. His death came at a transitional moment as he had split from his wife and was expecting a baby with his girlfriend. The stress and emotional aftermath they're facing is a tight walk rope with an incline. Things pick up in the spring with Jack, whose coping mechanism takes the form of a health and fitness kick, trying to rally the uneager group through a series of hikes as they look for the perfect spot to scatter Nick's ashes. It sets them on a path of miscommunication, tension, and hilarity as their relationships shift each time they reconnect. House of Dragons Season 3 will be coming in June on HBO, as well as The Life, Larry, and Pursuit of Unhappiness on June 26th. That would be a Larry David show. Little House on the Prairie on Netflix will be premiering on July 9th. Ride or Die will be premiering on Prime Video on July 15th with Hannah Waddington and Octavia Spencer in a European set action-packed buddy series. The pair play best friends, but Judith has been hiding an important fact from her bestie. She's a deadly assassin. Hijinks ensue, and it's nice to see them paired on screen and a recent burst of shows that feature middle-aged women with lively on-screen lives has become a real highlight this year. The actors are executive producers on the series, created by Tessa Coates with Matt Miller. Show-running Bill Nighy also stars. And again, this will be Prime Video in mid-July. And Ted Lasso is coming back for a season 4 on Apple TV in August. Who would have imagined that TV's most polarizing series would be a gentle comedy about creating a family set against a low-performing British soccer team and its imported American coach? Its merits and demerits hotly debated episode by episode across three seasons. Having neatly completed its arc 3 years ago with Jason Sudeikis' Ted having gone home to Kansas, a fourth season, followed by a fifth and sixth, hardly seem necessary or wise, but as a fan, they'll be there. The new arc brings the title character back to Richmond coach a second division women's football team, which presents new thematic possibilities and opportunities for growth. Returning with Sudeikis are Hannah Waddington, Juno Temple, Brett Goldstein, Brandon Hunt, and Jeremy Swift. You can catch them on August 5th on Apple TV. Now, the picks of the week, streaming a show called Summer Water, Shirley Henderson, Doug Gray Scott, and Valeri Kane, starring in a six-part adaptation of the Sarah Moss novel that will begin streaming Tuesday on Acorn TV. A Good Girl's Guide to Murder will be streaming in its entirety. It's a BBC-produced show that adapts Holly Jackson's novel, Good Girl, Bad Blood, streaming on Netflix starting this coming Wednesday. Deli Boys, a well-reviewed crime comedy, second season will be up, featuring Kumail Nanjiani, Robin Thede, Andrew Winnells, and Lily Singh in guest roles. They'll be streaming on Thursday on Hulu. Home video and on demand, you can see Avatar, Fire and Ash, the continuation of the Avatar story, sees Jake Sully, played by Sam Worthington, and his Navi clan continuing to fight to protect Pandora with additional complications as another warlike Navi tribe arrive to fight. Reminders of Him, an adaptation of the Colleen Hoover novel about a young woman fresh out of prison trying to start a new life with hopes of meeting her daughter, also starts streaming this week. The Bride by director Maggie Gyllenhaal is a take on the Bride of Frankenstein and sees her as a rebellious 1930s gangster's mom, starring Jessica Buckley and Christian Bale. The Napa Boys, an action comedy about friends who embark on bizarre adventures through a wine region of California. The Yeti is available, the rescue mission in northern Alaska to get more than they bargained for in a horror flick about Yetis. Super Mario Galaxy movie will be streaming now in home to video and on demand. The Mario gang set out for outer space to find and rescue Princess Peach's long-lost sister, Princess Rosalina, in a sequel to the 2023 hit. Lee Cronin's The Mummy, a director of recent Evil Dead Rise, reanimates the often-told cinematic story. And lastly, Bob Odenkirk stars as an interim sheriff who discovers a small Minnesota town's violent secret in an action flick called Normal. You've been listening to articles and features from the weekend edition of the Post Standard, and your reader has been Donna. As always, if you have feedback for us, we would appreciate it because we want to make this better for you every week. And thank you for listening.